You're listening to All of It. I'm Kusha Navadar in for Allison Stewart. It's been an exciting few months for celebrated American novelist Percival Everett. His 2001 novel Erasure got a big screen adaptation titled American Fiction. It starred Jeffrey Wright and Sterling K. Brown and took home the Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay. And today is publication day for Everett's latest book. In the new novel, James, Everett takes on one of the most well-known works of literature in the American canon. It's Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. But in Mr. Everett's version, the story is told by Jim, an enslaved man who decides to run away rather than be sold away from his beloved family. Jim has taught himself how to read and how to protect himself. You remember the dialect that Jim uses in Twain's book? Everett presents that dialect in his version as code switching Jim does to pacify the white people around him. So Jim's dismayed to find that at the same time he's run away, Huck Finn faked his own murder and split as well, leaving Jim a suspect for the crime. Banding together, they journey together on the Mississippi River. Everett's telling is engaging and funny, but it never lets you forget about the danger Jim is in. It's more violent than the Twain story and more honest about the threats faced by every black man, enslaved or free in America. James by Percival Everett is out today, and tomorrow he'll be speaking about the book with Brandon Taylor at PNT Knitwear at 7 p.m. Tickets are on sale now. Percival Everett, welcome to All of It. Thank you for being here.
For having me.
Absolutely. So when was the first time you read The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn?
Well, I was a fairly young child. I read an abridged version first, and I can't remember exactly how it was abridged, but it was short. And then later in high school, and I don't know if it was for school or not, I did read the unabridged version.
What was your first impression of that book? Do you remember?
I remember not being terribly impressed, as the abridged version was merely an adventure story. I had been impressed by other works of Twain, Life in the Mississippi and Roughing It, which I found, funny enough that I can say that Twain's humor influenced mine.
Go more into that. How do you think what did you borrow from his humor?
The ironic observations I always found very human, but also engaged and at the same time detached.
Mm. And so, Huck Finn, not totally impressed, you're saying, on your first read. When did you get the idea at first to take on your own version of the story?
Oh, that wasn't until 3 years ago, perhaps, when I thought to myself, has anyone told this story from the point of view of Jim? So I searched around, and it turns out no one had. And then I thought, well, I hadn't thought of it either, so I embarked on it.
And when you embarked on it, how did you navigate the idea of sticking to the original story versus deviating? Where did you decide you might want to stick to the plot, and where did you decide, no, this is the time that I should deviate?
Well, I had to accept, as all fiction writers do, that this world exists. And so I read the novel some 15 times in a row. I would finish it and just start again. And I did that to blur it, to own it and to forget it. And so when I started working, I did not look back at Huck Finn. It was internalized, but yet not formed in any way. And so much of the material of the novel remains, but it's not a retelling.
Yeah.
It's just the same world.
Did you say you reread it 15 times?
Yes.
Can you walk us through that process 15 times looking at this source text? What was that evolution like for you? What was something you took away the seventh, eighth, ninth time? How did that look?
Well, you start feeling crazy after a while. It's like repeating a word over and over again until it sounds like nonsense. And that's what I was attempting to achieve.
Tell me, attempting to achieve, make it sound like nonsense. Why is that?
Because I didn't want to merely regurgitate a story. Mm-hmm. I wanted to tell it as if it had happened. And so I the text became meaningless, and the only thing that exists was the world.
It reminds me of the way a musician might approach variations on a theme. And tell me how you think about that. Like, you are embodying the text enough where you decide, this is, I live in this world, now I am going to tell a new version. Is that a fair comparison?
I think it is. I immediately, and even when I was working on it, and often when I work, I think of John Coltrane's rendition of My Favorite Things, which is recognizable as My Favorite Things in the beginning, but then it becomes Coltrane's. And it actually does a great deal of violence to the song, and so has, and can be uncomfortable for a lot of people.
You play jazz guitar, right?
I used to play jazz guitar. I'm not terribly
still kind
good
of in
anymore.
Your, in your bones a little bit. I mean, you're talking about Coltrane.
Yeah, yeah,
you still.
I know how one plays jazz guitar. We can put it that way.
As one jazz musician to another, I got to ask, yeah, how does music influence your writing approach?
I think in timing, I can't articulate it, but I think that when I go to fiction, there's a kind of syncopation that one might find in jazz. I never start on the one. And ironically, I can't listen to serious music while I'm writing.
Brain space gets too distracted.
I listen to it.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely. Let's talk about the character of Jim a little bit. How would you describe the Jim created by Mark Twain in the original novel, and how does your version differ?
Well, Twain's novel is about Huck, and so the novel, and so Jim is however important a character, is not even a character that Twain was equipped to inhabit fully. And so his Jim is fairly superficial. There's no depth to his story. He's a representation of an enslaved man. My novel is about Jim. And I suppose a complaint about it might be that Huck isn't fully developed. I hope that he is. But my Jim is moving through a space where the most important thing to him is his family and a kind of psychic survival more than a physical survival.
Tell me more about the psychic survival element. I think part of it is that what that reminds me of are these dream sequences where he's talking to political philosophers like Montesquieu and Voltaire and Locke. Is that what you're referring to there?
Well, that informs his sense of self, certainly. It's the intellectual self that he's denied by the culture that he lives in. He can't articulate his thoughts to anyone in the world because it's a danger to him.
Part of that character choice that I think readers will immediately grasp is through dialect. We mentioned that in the intro. Part of what made Mark Twain famous was his use of dialect in his writing. And you really play around with that in this novel because Jim is constantly code switching. In front of white people, he talks with a certain dialect, but around his family and friends, he speaks differently. Like at one point, talking in his sleep, Jim uses the word hierarchy, and then Huck has to ask him what it means. How did you want to play around with language and code switching there?
One of the things that I think oppressed peoples do is create languages that allow them to communicate with each other that does not allow entry of their oppressors. They can speak privately. And that's essentially what I'm working with here. They have to speak a certain way to navigate the world of white people and their owners. But they also have to be able to speak to each other in a way that doesn't betray what they're actually talking about.
And, you know, it's not just that James wants to read, but he also feels compelled to write, too. He even has another enslaved person steal a pencil for him, which leads to the man being whipped horribly. Why is James so drawn to writing? What is it that he wants to capture on the page?
Language. Owning language is perhaps more crucial to freedom than anything else.
Mm. Have you ever felt similarly to that yourself? Like you almost are using writing as an act of liberation, or that you almost can't write as fast as your own brain wants you to?
I don't know if I've had the experience that Jim is actually having, but it's certainly the case that for me, language is my way of being in the world. For other artists, it would be painter or music. But it's how I understand the world. And it is, and in that way, my place and my freedom are established by my ability to use it. He's also responding to the history of slave narratives that are related or told by someone for an individual. And Jim is really intent on writing his own story and not relying on someone to translate it for him.
You brought a reading of that exact topic, right? A part where Jim is writing.
As it turns out, yes. You steered me right toward it.
It's two to tango.
Okay. So you'd like me to do that now?
If you'd love, yeah, we'd love it.
Oh, yeah, certainly. My name is James, and I wish I could tell my story with a sense of history as much as and then sold again. My mother's mother, yes?
Oh,
I thought you said.
Go ahead.
My mother's mother was from some place on the continent of Africa, I've been told, or perhaps simply assumed. I cannot claim to any knowledge of that world or those people, whether my people were kings or beggars. I admire those who, at 5 years of age, like Venture Smith, can remember the clans of their ancestors, their names, and their and the movements of their families through the wrinkles, trenches, and chasms of the slave trade. I can tell you that I am a man who is cognizant of his world, a man who has a family, who loves a family, who has been torn from his family, a man who can read and write, a man who will not let his story be self-related, but self-written. With my pencil, I wrote myself into being. I wrote myself to here.
When you say the act of writing is an act of empowerment, in your own writing, you've in past interviews talked about how you don't know exactly what you're doing and how you are putting things on the page, and it sounds a lot like improvising. I mean, there's this whole idea for yourself as well. In previous interviews, you talked about work amnesia, where you forget about the novel as soon as you've written it. Juxtaposing
yes.
those two things is really interesting. Is that, if for yourself, is that work amnesia by choice? Is it just how you, like you said, live in the world with your writing?
It feels like it's not by choice, but I would accept that. If someone accused me of choosing to do it, I wouldn't fight that. I think about what I'm making, about the work in front of me, and to sort of pause and live in past work is not conducive to new work. So I call it the mother bear school of art. When I turn it loose, it's on its own. If it can eat and survive, that's great, but it can't come back to the den.
Mother bear school of thought. That is wonderful. Also, slightly violent, I gotta say. It's kind of primal.
It's a mean world.
You know, good segue there, because the world that we're living in with Huck Finn is also mean. Not to put too much of a point on it, but in the scenes where Huck and Jim get separated, you really have the freedom to take things beyond the scope of the original novel. We really see Mother Bear come out in full force. What was something you knew you wanted to achieve in those moments where Jim and Huck were separated and you really did get to stray from the source material?
Well, you know, slavery, there's an opening scene in a film called, in a novel called Band of Angels by Robert Penn Warren, and later a film with Sidney Poitier and Clark Gable. And in the opening scene, you get to see a good slave owner. And that's always been amusing to me, that slavery can be depicted as somehow a good time. This could be gentle slavery. And so in my novel, that's not happening.
Another element of the novel that really sticks out is naming. You know, the name of the novel is James, which is an elevated version of Jim. How much of a role do names have in determining who we are, you think?
Well, first I'll back up and say that it's not so much that James is an elevated version of Jim, that Jim is a diminished version of James. And so there's a distinction to be made there.
Thank you for that.
Naming is important in that you talk about power. We name our children. We name places if we get there first. Names can have sort of a cultural import. Certain names can. If my name was Conway Twitty, I would be a country singer. Mm-hmm. I would have no choice. So naming is crucial in our understanding of the world and our participation in it. But also, for me as a novelist, naming is just a little bit fun.
Absolutely. Your own name has so much meaning too. Percival means piercing the veil or the valley. Has that been important in your name? Do you carry anything from the meaning of your own name into your life?
No, I don't. Except for the fact that Parsifal is the only knight of the Round Table naive enough to actually see the Holy Grail. So I suppose that's something.
Yeah. You know, the Oscars just happened. We mentioned about the award for Best Adapted Screenplay. Congratulations on being a part of that. The novel was adapted, Erasure was adapted last year into the film American Fiction. Screenwriter and director Cord Jefferson was the person who took home the Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay. What did you think of that adaptation?
Oh, I enjoyed it very much. I never expected to see my novel on screen. I expected to see what I saw, which is a translation of it. And I think he made a very nice piece of work. It's different and necessarily different, and I think enjoyably different.
Were you able to join any of the Oscar night celebrations?
My wife and I did attend the Oscars. It's not something I need to do again, but it was fun.
And now that you're speaking soon about James to audiences, have there been any reactions that have surprised you or delighted you as you talk to people now that this book is out in the world?
Well, I don't read reviews, but I've been told by my publisher that they're good. I get reports, and it's great. I think that the book is getting so much attention is wonderful. If I can get a few more readers, that's terrific.
Well, we're excited to see how the book comes out, and thank you so much for writing it. The book is James. It is out today. We've been talking to Percival Everett. Tomorrow, Everett will be speaking at P&T Knitwear with Brandon Taylor at 7 p.m., and tickets are on sale now. Thank you so much, Percival, for joining us.
Thank you so much for the attention to the work and for having me.
Absolutely.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.